to look out for that too. And that's more common with the spirit that's not attached to the client through love or familiarity, but through some kind of addictive pattern.
Some kind of dependency.
Yeah, or dependency pattern. That's more common with them to switch hosts. That's the best way that I could put it. In all of these, the attachment, though, is external to self. When an attachment becomes so much a part of you, and you are so dependent upon it, that you're calling that energy into yourself, that's when you become endangered as being possessed. Now, will you ever see a client that's actually possessed? That is possible.
You may.
Supposing my connection, I don't want to use this, I don't want to put the thought out there because my mother is gone now. Let's say that your attachment to your deceased uncle is so intense that you feel that you can't get up in the morning without him taking care of you or
giving you a message, telling you what to do.
Mm-hmm. Right, and you can't live without him.
Right.
By opening yourself more and more and more, you allow that, and it could even be through love, you allow the energy of that spirit to permeate you until the two of you are this close, and like I said before, you gradually have your own persona eradicated, and you've given it over to the spirit. That's a possession, and that only happens when the other spirit is invited in.
Realize that other spirit is going to have a conscience.
Mm-hmm.
We leave here, most of us leave here with a conscience. So they're going to have their own guilt issues, their own dependency issues, but they may not be able to help themselves. What happens with somebody that's 400 pounds and eats and can't stop? They're aware that they have an issue, but for some reason, they may not be able to terminate that. There's also another little quirk to overweight, and I don't want this to be blown out of proportion, but if you have a family history of overweight, and you get an attachment from a family member who has passed who is also overweight, isn't it possible then that you're going to pick up their hunger, their dependency on food, and you manifest it as a physical disability yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even know.
And you don't
exactly.
even know. Right.
Exactly.
Right.
45 pounds less.
All you know is in the middle of the night, you're sitting there, and you get this unbelievable urge for chocolate, and you have no idea where it came,
where it came from.
But you go get it.
Mm-hmm. The other way that a possession could happen, take the illustration I gave earlier with the daughter and mom, and the mom was over-controlling in life. Well, if that mom dies and feels that she's left things undone and doesn't trust the daughter to do them, it's very easy for her to use that fear link between the two of them to literally plunge into the daughter and take her over.
Now, the daughter can only be either taken over or influenced if she has the feeling of lack of self or doesn't have the strength of character to stick to her own guns and her own values and to be decisive about her own issues.
Again, she's got to invite the mom in.
Once you become doubtful, it opens the door. And
right.
Once you remember, oh, mom told me how to do this, and I was never really good at doing this, boy, you've just opened the door to mom to tell you everything to do.
Mm-hmm. You're seeing the difference here, by the way, between possession and attachment, and between attachment and just a love bond? You see the differences? This is very important, okay? Because you don't want to take somebody who's just coming into you for a regular reading and has a love attachment to their deceased husband that they want to communicate with, and you start telling them they're possessed.
Now, I also want to kind of twist this a little bit. Now, you can call an attachment a connection. When we talk about attachment, we're assuming that the influence is negative in growth to the person that has the attachment and the spirit that has the attachment. However, if you've had a 40, 50-year relationship with somebody, and it's been a really, really good relationship, and that person leaves, and you're probably not too far behind because you're up there in your late age, there's going to be a very strong connection. You can call it an attachment. There's going to be a link. There's going to be a connection. And that person will come through because of your inviting them in and their wanting to be here. They will have an influence on you, but because the influence was growth-oriented when you were in the relationship, they now become more or less a guide.
Mm-hmm.
helping you to deal with issues and giving you the urgings and the inclinations to do things that would be in your better interests. So the mechanism is exactly the same, but the intent is what changes the type of focus.
Okay, because I mean, I know I have a connection with my partner that died in 94.
And if you care, it's a good connection.
And let it go. And then you're right.
And that's a positive thing for you.
Yeah.
Because it gives you back your power.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to make sure that I've not got this attachment that I've had for 11, going on 11 years now, that because I've always talked and heard when I need it. It's like, and it's almost like it only comes through when I'm needing it.
Mm-hmm.
At least I'm not, you're here. So
yeah.
It's not bad.
No, I mean, I never felt controlled by it, or you know what I'm saying?
Now, on the other side, which is completely the opposite perspective, which is probably going to sound all very whacked out. Everybody remember somebody in New York that was going around called Son and a Sam that was killing people? My dog told me to do it, or my Rice Krispies told me to do it. Some of them may have lost touch with reality. Some of them may be influenced by attachments
or
by possessions.
Was he possessed?
We don't know.
He certainly have been.
He could have been.
Possibility.
Could have been.
More than possession than attachment.
Very possible. Now let's talk about the various. The various types of possession, which hopefully none of you will ever see or have to deal with, because it is rare. First of all, remember that you cannot be possessed by anything from spirit unless you invite it in. That's the most important thing to recognize.
It's your choice.
Now, sometimes that spirit possession could be as simple as what I described before. The mom who controlled her daughter through fear, and when she's on the other side has things she still needs to get done, the fear opens the daughter, bam, she just dives in, takes the daughter over. First thing you know, the daughter's doing all the mom stuff. Okay? That kind of possession is something which, once the daughter becomes aware that she is capable of separating, she can be taught the chakra exercise, she can be taught different techniques for separating herself out, for curing and healing her fear. Could you have a priest perform an exorcism on that particular type of possession? Probably yes. There's little or no risk to you, because once the mom is clear of the daughter, she most certainly doesn't want you. Okay? You're not the one she's interested in controlling. However, there are other types of possession that, as a medium, you really need to steer clear of, because your mediumship ability makes you so open to spirits that if you're dealing with the possession of a client by an entity which has taken that client over because it wants to be continuing an addictive pattern, it wants to be an alcoholic. It's totally focused on drugs or alcohol. Or if the entity has taken over that victim because they simply want to use their energy and accomplish something in life, and maybe they weren't even a relative, maybe they were just a nasty, noxious entity who didn't want to leave life. Okay? You don't want to involve yourself with that being, because that being is in particular who they take over.
Just
they're
to feed me.
Right. They're only interested in someone who's got a lot of energy and who's open enough to get. And the problem with trying to do a exorcism from the point of view of being a psychic is that it's almost impossible for us to do something like that without creating a psychic bond to the person. And the instant we connect to that client using empathy, telepathy, clairsentience, or any other one of our psychic abilities, that connection will allow the entity to leap from the client to us.
Fair game.
It's perceived like an invitation. Okay? So my advice, if you see or ever encounter someone who's the subject of that type of possession, if they are a religious person, send them to the nearest born-again church to get exercised and tell them to become religious and stick with it. The priest can do it. Second, if they're not religious, send them to the nearest mental institution. Tell them to put themselves into it, and deal with the psychologist. Because you see, the psychologist doesn't believe in possession. Mm-hmm. And eventually the psychologist will cut the possessing entity off from all energy. Because as the person who's possessed gradually learns to disbelieve in themselves and the attachment, the entity has to leave.
The well dries up.
The well dries up. Mm-hmm. So the priest or the psychologist are the people who can do exorcisms, not us.
We're way too open, way too vulnerable.
Right. Okay? The only exception to that would be the mom and daughter, where the connection got too close, that type of situation. And there, it would be through training and discussion and counseling that you could help her, but still, a priest or a counselor, a psychologist, would still be a good advisor. Okay? Is there anything you want to add to that?
Who are these people that are on the other side that are attachments? Any idea?
Or that would want to possess someone.
Yeah.
To that degree. Anybody could become an attachment if you hold on to them too tightly.
Well, those who were here on the physical world and want to continue to be doing the same thing?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
No difference.
And is there, it's in the same sense, the person always has to touch you to ground out. In the physical world, once they get over the other side, they want to poke your emotions so you be receptive to what it is they have to dump on you.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason that somebody wants to ground out on you is because they don't have sufficient energy to keep the tension under wraps. So the end result, like anything else, is always energy. Remember, energy is a commodity. It has no mind, it has no purpose, it has no function other than to move things, people, emotions. Okay? All it is in physics, it's an ability for work. And you can buy it, you can loan it, you can extort it. I mean, it's all the same. It's the same thing as money. It's currency in an emotional vein.
Energy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still, with what we've learned, say something like that did happen and we got an attachment. We can still do our protections, clear it out, push it away, salt baths, whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good lead into the next thing that John's going to discuss with you.
Thank you for saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in that same sense, if you do pick up an attachment, mind you, the spirit or identity that's attached to your client is attached to that client because of a number of different doorways. Could be fear, could be physical, could be obligation, it could be emotional love or connection or feelings of possession. I don't mean a possession kind of a thing. But you, as the reader, have none of those emotional potentials within yourself. So it's very much like a disease. You catch the germ, you feel something in you that feels like a cold starting to develop. If you're smart and you're quick, you'll take steps to make your immune system strong enough to throw it off. You're the same way as a medium. You go into meditation, you do your clearing, you do your work, whatever it takes to bring your spiritual immune system back to its sense of strength and its sense of balance. But if you let it go on, that, albeit you... back up a little. Some of the entities are very sly. In a sense, like people are sly. They will wait till you're not looking or not paying attention, and they will influence you then. When does a person attempt to influence you as a con artist? They're going to wait till you're otherwise occupied, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the same sense, an entity is going to come in and attempt to influence you when you're not focused or you're not aware of self. You haven't taken your temperature. You don't recognize that there is not self there. So what's your antidote to that kind? Take your temperature. Always be aware. Always reassess. Always reconnect to your higher self. Always cut off the third eye or the empathy. Because the empathy is going to be one of the strongest places that this entity is able to get through. The entity, as a general rule, most of them are not on the level of higher self. This is why we go up there, because there's very little threat. And if there is a threat up there on that level, they are going to be so damn powerful that they're really not going to give two you-know-whats about you, because you're not going to have enough energy to sustain a feeding relationship.
That's a good point.
So your difficulty is going to be probably from the empathetic to the solar plexus, either one, and down. So the more you clear yourself, the more you put your vibration up here, it's kind of like it just falls away because there's nothing for it to grab a hold of.
So they have a field day with the everyday people just walking
drama
around.
People. They it's love drama people.
That's who they would be most attracted to.
Or people that are like ambulance chasers, mm-hmm. Those are drama people. Anybody who gets involved in the kind of relationships, that's prime meat for them, because they're allowing themselves to get swept away by external emotional forces, and this is like someone comes in and feeds and they're not even going to know.
I mean, the drama people may not be so much drama, but it was added to.
Yes.
Once they
right.
open the
and then guess who? Then both of them get a rush.
Right.
See, there's a payoff.
So there's a bunch of them out there just, one person gets excited, that person, that spirit comes through, then it gets this person next to him worked up,
uh-huh.
like we were talking yesterday, and it just becomes a big...
A mob whoosh. Scene.
Yeah. Up there and down here. I mean, it's just kind of,
yeah.
they're all right. gathering, like, okay, let's jump into this.
There's
one.
A billion of those drama
yeah.
people.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Two out of three.
Now, you got to ask yourself, all these drama people, how many of them are actually dealing with attachments that propel them into becoming drama people? There's a susceptibility to start with, and that comes through the ego with a sense of lack.
Mm-hmm.
But if you allow yourself to go down that path where you're allowing yourself to be swept away by emotions or instigations that come from the outside, they're going to be a hell of a lot more salesmen coming along, offering you something and pushing you and inflating your emotions so they can feed also. So the intensity of a drama person, suppose you're in a family, and the family is all drama-oriented. And suppose grandma, who was deceased 5 years ago, was the drama queen in the family. Could it be, perhaps, that grandma is connected to everybody in the family, feeding everybody little bits of information and keeping the interest in the bank growing mm-hmm. so she can feed?
Is this your family?
How interesting.
No, I think it's mine.
I plead the fifth.
Yeah, it might be my helmet too.
It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's
but remember what we talked about earlier
time
on.
Me.
Yes.
The past class, it was a gentleman in the family who had a very strong and powerful ancestor and managed to create a health problem that affected every male in the family. Every single one of them reached a certain age and got it. And that's not, I mean, a problem where you end up with a knee replacement is not congenital, okay? Mm-hmm. That's not a hereditary problem.
The behavior that leads to it is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, back to disease, the implications of where this can reach. My understanding of what disease is that first you start with wrong thinking, which is not in the general flow of where your awareness needs to go. You don't pay attention. The guys upstairs, they help you to push you into a situation where that wrong thinking now becomes emotional. They're making it more dense and more intense, hoping that you're going to pay attention and take care of the issue that's out of alignment. Well, if you don't and you resist it and you hold on to whatever payoff you're getting for that kind of behavior, they're going to say, not listening to the emotions. Okay, let's make it physical. So they push you into making decisions in a way that will put you in a physical disability position. So now you literally have to pay attention to the issue. What's to say that some of these disease situations aren't aided by these attachments,
right.
these entities on the other side?
Certainly, if you are doing a mediumship session for a person who has some kind of a physical disability or health problem and in the course of your discussion with the person, you find out that that's the same health problem their mom and their grandmom had, one of the things you should be looking for is attachment. Not so much possession, but attachment.
It kind of makes it look at a lineage a little differently, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And that person, in order to become healthy, may very well have to detach the person that died.
Someone who's coming to you is pretty open anyway. You would think they would be coming with an open mind. Is part of, if you feel that there is an attachment to this person, is a part of this, could you lead them down the road of meditation?
Good point. Because my next statement here was, how do you detach them?
Oh.
Okay.
See, Carl gave you that in a few minutes ago.
Yes, I know. He's tuned in.
He gave it to you again. This is good. Well-trained student here.
Now, in the same way that I said before, you choose your battles. You don't resist, quote-unquote, the enemy because that gives them power and an energy. You don't address the attachment solely. Yes, you do address the attachment. I'll tell you how you do that in a moment. But the first thing you do is you deal with the client and help and encourage that client to take steps, to take their own power back, to make their own decisions, and just qualities that brings them back in control of their own mental, emotional, and physical circumstances. Something that in some way will give them encouragement and hope that what they're doing is a good place to go. This is a hard thing to do with when somebody has lost somebody. But when they have, that's what grieving professionals are all about. They don't help you whine about who you lost. They focus on what issues are out of whack in your life and how can they help you to focus on those issues and take charge and do away with the feeling that you need someone else to help you with those. That's the first prong. The other prong of the attack is that you get your client to literally focus on the entity or the relative that is attached. Say prayers, give energy, give the love or the attention that they're looking for on your terms. So they get what they need, they start to grow, and then they move on themselves.
Now with an attachment, not a possession, mind you, but an attachment, imagine that between the client and the attached entity is a very strong tube through which energy is traveling back and forth. And the stronger the attachment becomes, the thicker and wider that tube becomes.
It's a supply line.
Well, using the technique we learned yesterday, remember the shave technique?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can visually do that to your client. You can also take the client through a meditation to do that to themselves. However, unless the client corrects the emotional dependency, that conduit will be recreated as soon as they walk out the door.
If you take an aspirin, it'll make the headache appear to go away, but when the aspirin wears off, it's still there.
Right. But it's still a valuable technique because you can allow the client using that technique to feel what it feels like to be whole, healthy, without the attachment. And usually, well, how many of you yesterday just having the experience of having that, you know, Roto-Rooter clear your all of your connections to people that you have bonds to on this plane, usually love and caring bonds. And yet as soon as you cleared those connections away, didn't you all feel like you wanted to sit straighter and you were lighter and you felt happier?
Lighter, clearer.
You felt less pulled down? Okay. Well, if the client's having those same connections, those same attachments to people on the other planes that are pulling them down, when they cut them loose, they're going to feel so good that they now have something to struggle to recreate. So if you show them how to do the Roto-Rooter, or shave them yourself if they can't do it on their own, and then tell them the techniques of prayer, of disassociation, put the parent out of their mind, make your own choices, work towards personal health and keeping that person away, heal from that loss, finally, okay? That's the method of dealing with disattaching.
Does everybody understand the principle that prayer is actually giving attention and love and energy to a person with an intention?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that prayer is?
Mm-hmm.
I don't care whether you say Hail Mary, or whatever it is, whatever the chant is, whatever the prayer is, the intent is to give that person or situation energy to grow, to recover, to do something with. You don't have to have a religion. You can just visualize them and bathe them with the energy your own way.
Okay. Just before we finish up on this topic, do you have any questions, first of all, between just the plain love connection and attachment and a possession? Do you have any questions on the different types of possession and how they could occur?
Possession of a person, it's Carl's the list, which we know it is anyway. It can literally jump to someone else.
Depends on the type of possession.
And the affinity of personality and focus.
Right. If that possession was mom taking over the daughter in order to finish out her life, it's unlikely that person's going to jump to
right.
someone else.
But if he's a druggie and I'm a druggie, then
yes.
I run the risk of it jumping to me.
If I'm a better druggie, yeah. Or if I'm a
very
open psychic medium, yeah. Okay, it could jump. Which is why you don't mess with people who are possessed. Send them to a psychologist or send them to a priest. Okay? There is one other type of possession that you find very, very, very rarely discussed in books. Gurdjieff mentions it.
Castaneda mentions it.
It's a very
Ledbetter does.
And it's only like one paragraph here and one paragraph there. It's almost as if people in the psychic field are so afraid of it they don't even want to mention it. And that is the entity, I call them jumpers. Very, very rare. The entities that don't die. Someone who usually through some form of shamanic or magical practice has understood how to leave their own body at the moment of death without losing consciousness, and instead of dying, jumps into somebody else's body, usually a body they've prepared to receive them through a mutual
an alkalite training,
and take it over.
And then that person's body and that spirit or entity finds another person and grooms them for the next jump that they need to make.
So there are some of these people alive on the planet who've been alive for 10,000 years because they just never had the courtesy to die.
And are very good of it.
Okay.
And it becomes a person like, I'm sorry to say, like a shark. It becomes an eating machine.
Yeah,
they forget the original purpose that they wanted to remain conscious to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Now it becomes
just
a desperation to survive and to eat.
And unfortunately, mediums are wonderful fodder for them because they can't affect the physical plane directly except through another person. And they can't perform any magical or psychic function except through a psychic. So psychics and mediums are targets for that type of an entity.
Mm-hmm.
Very rare, but I wanted you to know about them just in case you should ever run across one.
Also, not just psychics and mediums, also artists.
Yeah,
because think of the receptivity that you must have to
mm-hmm.
be an artist.
That's true.
And the receptivity must have to be a medium.
Okay.
Any questions?
Okay, good time to break then. And after our break, we have one more important subject to talk about that is relative to mediumship and healing. And that has to do with something called soul retrieval.
Okay. All right.
Wait.
Are there any questions or comments about spirit attachment or entity attachment? I want to just remind you that in your handouts that we're going to give you, there is an article in here that covers it, and there are three authors here that you can look up information through. Okay? And are there any more questions about attachment as per se, how it works, why it works, how to terminate it? I think we determined that the way to terminate it is to deal with the client in terms of building confidence and to deal with the spirit in terms of giving the energy that they're looking for, but on your terms.
Yeah, and in a moment, you're going to lead us through that meditation to
right.
clear, protect, and detach spirit, so that'll give you more concrete methods.
Now, looking at the spirit's perspective, this spirit that has perhaps become an attachment, how do you turn this spirit's perspective or focus around so that they let themselves become unattached and move on in whatever growth they feel is necessary? Realize that the payoff for them is the energy that they're getting from the person that they're attached to. What would you do? Any suggestions?
So their energy on the other side?
Yes. In which case, then, what would we do? How about a group healing for someone? Okay. Or you yourself working in terms of healing? How? The way you would do this is go into your workplace, pop up the energy screen, put their picture on the energy screen, and ask them, do they want to be healed of this? And you're asking the higher self. So if what they're doing is a lesson that they need to pass through, they'll say no. But if they really want to be healed and kind of be able to move on, they're going to say yes. In which case, then, there's a kind of a lot of different methods that you can use: prayer, energy, light, focus, whatever you want to call it, and feed this entity these kinds of things on your terms that you feel will help energize their higher self to take steps and put things in motion that will encourage that spirit to move on to wherever they need to go. This is called spirit or soul retrieval. This is one way to do it. There's another way to do it, and there was a reading that I had done a long while back for someone's grandmother. And this grandmother, when I went into mediumship reading, I saw who she was and where she was. She was in a very dark place, which, for lack of better words, might be considered purgatory. And why was she in this purgatory place? My understanding was that what she had done in this lifetime, somehow she had felt so remorseful and guilty about it that she was literally, by her own generation and creating the structure, punishing herself by putting herself in purgatory. So how do you change the perspective of this person? If you're dealing with somebody who's depressed, what do? You ask them about things. When did you feel really good about such and such? When you did this, how did you feel? You change their focus to a different subject where they felt good about themselves. That has a tendency of breaking the stagnancy or the stalemate focus. So what did I do? I went on and asked her, where were you? What did you do? What did you enjoy doing? And it got into this whole cooking thing. The kitchen, the kids, the pots, the whole nine yards about what is going on with cooking when she was there. And she was the happiest when she was there. So I kept banging the cooking issue. What did you do? Who did you serve? When did you cook? Etc., etc., etc. It made her focus on the activity that she felt really, really good about doing. So when she went back to the feeling of purgatory, what are you going to do when you've been depressed and somebody shows you and reminds you of the positive things you've been through and you go back to the depressing environment? All of a sudden there's a realization, hey, what am I doing here? So there's a start and change and refocusing, and for her, perhaps looking at the positive things and connecting to the people and those positive experiences that she had in other times in her life. This is another way of soul or spirit retrieval. What you're doing is you're helping them to let go of limiting circumstances that are usually self-imposed and move on in their growth. So how can you do that? Through encouragement and helping them to refocus, and or put them on your energy screen and send them healing energy, making sure that they want that healing energy and it's not something that they need to go through that you're interfering with. Okay. Let's see here. I just want to make sure there was nothing else that I missed relative to this. Okay. We can go a little bit further with this too. Why do we do it? The soul retrieval, or the helping the spirit become conscious of other parts of their lives that were more positive, that would encourage them to move on. Why do we do this? What are the benefits for us? I mean, you got to have some kind of payoff as to why you're doing this.
Right, you regain your energy back.
Okay, because why? You put energy out, wherever you put it out, and you get it back threefold, but it usually comes back from a different place. So it's kind of like putting it out there, and you kind of it comes back automatically. But more personally, more in a focus sense, why would you want to work with one particular soul in order to encourage them to move on, so to speak?
What's it to us?
Yeah. What do you care?
I don't know if I have an answer. I just...
Okay, but the point is, what's it to you? What do you care if that spirit does or doesn't go on?
Is that an attached spirit?
Well, that's to say that that grandmother was attached to the bad experiences through her own guilt.
She wouldn't have been attached to a living person. She was attached to the things that she felt she didn't accomplish or that she did incorrectly and was busy punishing herself. If you remember Robin Williams, What Dreams May Come, mm-hmm. where his deceased wife was,
that's
exactly
same thing.
The situation John's describing.
Toxic shame. Okay. And what do you? What do you?
Sense of peace within yourself.
Okay.
To know that you're helping even them be where they need to be.
Okay. That's one reason. Just bring a sense of peace to you, that you're doing something constructive to helping another being find a better way of behaving or existing. That's a payoff. That makes you feel good. That gives you a good ego sense. And I don't mean ego sense in terms mm-hmm. of inflating you, but making you feel good about what you're doing.
That you were able to be able to do that.
Sure.
I mean, and it's crossed your path for a reason.
Yes.
And number now one. That you're the only one that can help, but it is crossed your doorstep, so it would make you feel like, okay, here she is, let's see what I can do. And then if she accepted the healing and she could see put a smile back on her face and say, you know what, I don't have to live eternity this way. Then yeah, it would be like I feel good about that because it did cross my path and I was able to
mm-hmm. freeze up energy.
Yeah.
There's also another component to this too. In doing so, you learn another way of using your energy in a constructive fashion. So the payoff is as another tool. And in each person that you're going to deal with that may be stuck in some kind of environment, you're going to do some kind of work and attempt to find some way for that person to focus in order to release themselves from whatever they're doing. Doesn't that educate you to different kinds of circumstances and perspectives? Mm-hmm. Hers was cooking. I mean, for me, who's a guy, and just, I love to cook, but suppose I had no understanding of what cooking was. If I'm helping the spirit to look at that positive aspects of her cooking and what she felt and the everything that she smelled, the sensory input for me, the emotional input, the joy that I feel that she felt, because as connection to the spirit, I'm going to feel some sort of an empathy. So in its, let's just say, most selfish perspective, it's going to give me a rush, isn't it?
Well, I didn't want to say that because I thought it was supposed to be selfish, and I just didn't want to look at it.
I think that's personal growth.
But yes. It is something that you would, like I've worked for the AIDS work for years and walked through the process with many of the patients. And after it's over with, people say, how do you do it? Well, it's just, I know it crossed my door. I would have never thought I'd been there, but after it was over with, it was, you know, I know they mm-hmm. felt good. Mm-hmm. This person ended up dying with dignity and knowing that they're okay, and they were still touched and loved and hugged. And it just, you walk away from it feeling not drained, but, you know, this was
a satisfaction that you've made a connection that was using your productive energies for something. You feel good about being productive
yeah.
in some form.
Yeah, and I mean, people always say, well, you know, and I always aggravate, oh, I'm just getting an extra fluffy cloud. That's all I do it for. Just an aggravation because that's my character, just to, you know, BS a little bit. But it is something that just comes natural. It's just something you do. I think we all, to a degree, if someone's fell down, you reach down to help them and pick them back up. You don't just walk over them and leave them laying there.
Mm-hmm. Because if you walk over and leave them laying there, what do you feel? I should have, I could have, I would have.
I mean, I think the payoff is the good feeling.
Yes.
No matter how sacrificing it is, you're still doing it for that.
Now, whether it's a good feeling of helping them to become, or the rush that you get from feeling what they're feeling as they go through the change.
Yeah, because with the reading yesterday, with Karen's interview, I felt the good feelings from you, and then Sandy felt the feelings, and she was smiling, so I was getting, it's like a little triangle I felt here.
And you know she was feeling, because that was aiding her channel, because the better I felt, the wider her channel opened.
Exactly.
Yeah, because it was slinging out over this way, and I was just grinning, and I didn't know why.
No, the positive feelings, happy feelings, up feelings always widen that channel. Negative, hurtful, depressing, you know, tear-jerking kind of feelings narrow it, constrict it.
Now, next question, which is real serious relative to this. What's your responsibility to that entity? I don't mean the client. We know your responsibility to the client. Okay, we don't discuss that for the most part. But what's your responsibility to the entity?
I don't have a responsibility to them. Because if I felt that way, I'd never, ever stop doing... I'd feel responsible for every entity out there.
Sure. So what you're saying is that
you're
basically not responsible for them at all.
Right.
Okay. Good. I agree. The only thing you are responsible is for what you give them.
Or what you take away from them.
Or what you take away from them, right. What your exchange is comprised of. But there's no way that you're responsible to have to take care of them. And in no way are you responsible to have to take something from them that they want to ditch.
Okay. Remember, you never have to read anyone. But you do owe every person the courtesy of polite treatment.
Right, of course.
And that's even the person who's crossed over.
That's who I'm talking about.
Okay, yeah, but
both
I'm talking
sides.
About with the readings, is both sides that it
both
works
sides.
Out.
Yes.
Because you're responsible
but I can't
to yourself
respond
and not your feeling and relating.
Correct.
That's right. And if you're not responsible to that entity and how they're feeling and how your demeanor is affecting them, then you're not really being respectful of yourself.
That's
right.
That's just courtesy to anyone.
Sure.
Past being.
Mm-hmm.
And the patterns that you are given in terms of this become sort of like spiritual manners. Like we talk about the ethics of mediumship. It's the same thing as spiritual manners. All these are guidelines that tell you, if you're in doubt about what you need to do or how you need to do it, follow this.
Mm-hmm.
And this will give you a framework. But once you get to a point where you're so comfortable in understanding of the ins and outs of the framework and the reasonings why you do or don't do things, that you can just do it on your own and kind of in here you know whether it fits or not. Just like I look at religion as training wheels for spirituality. In its most positive form, it gives something to someone to live by, to go by, until they can glean or understand what the feeling or the understanding is relative to what they're going through. But in any discipline, you always reach a point where the discipline now becomes a hindrance to your own growth.
You must transcend it.
Exactly. You have to go beyond it. So you, as far as religion goes, as far as spirit communication goes, you don't have to go to a church, a synagogue, or a mosque, whatever. You carry that within you. That's your form, your structure. And you go anywhere you want with it. But you first have to have the structure to recognize how is it, what is the structure, what does it do, what are the benefits, what are the deficits, how does it fit with you, your values, and how you want to live your life. And once you've arranged that within yourself, you don't need the outside guidance. In the same sense, we look at our guides, and for some reason we think our guides know everything and they're going to tell us everything we need to know about what we need to do. No. Once you ask a question about a particular kind of situation and you get their help and their answer, the next time that comes around, they're going to be mama's, whatever. You're not going to hear anything from them. And the intonation will be, you already got this information. You figure it out. You've got to be responsible for your own action. And you're going to be given what you need, but only so much as what you're ignorant of initially. And once you get what you need, you should be responsible enough to remember it and kind of pack it away in a way that, in a place that will be useful to you and accessible to you. You can't expect everybody else to do your work for you.
No one likes to repeat themselves.
No, right? No. And that's just like history.
Yeah.
If you don't listen to the history, you're doomed to repeat it over and over again. And how many times can one person tell you the same thing over and over again? Okay, so what's the payoff? You get a rush out of it. You have the recognition of knowing that I've done something constructive, something good, that has helped another person get past whatever it is that blocks them from becoming a better better person. And that's my definition of service. And I can do that flipping burgers. I can do it as a shrink. I can do it as a medium. But I'm aiding them. I'm giving them assistance to pull up their own bootstraps and move past something. Okay, enough soapbox.
I enjoyed it.
Cool. All right. So what is it? Why do we do it? How does it work? Which we already discussed. What is our responsibility, your responsibility? I think you got a good handle on that. Any questions on this before we do some work concerning it? No? Okay. Let's see what we got here. All right. What I'd like to do is a meditation that will encompass using the energies in a way where we're first going to clear a space and a person. How much we got?
43.
43 minutes? Okay, good. This will happen quick, and then I'll take a break, and then we can take our, do what you need to do, and come back and sit down and do our meditation. All right. What I do want to...
So delicate.
I tell it like it is. What can I say? What I want to draw your attention to is everybody's driven along the road and see the crosses of where somebody's passed. Okay? Now, there's one that I'm very cognizant of. You go all the way up 41, go on to River Road. There's one all the way out on the right side. I don't know if you're aware of it, but there is one there. Now that I've planted that in your mind, are there any other ones that you're very much aware of right now?
Yeah, there's one on Bernstorff Road.
Okay. So when we do this, you guys concentrate on Bernstorff Road. I will concentrate on the one I know up on River Road.
I see one on I-75 when I'm heading home.
Mm-hmm.
But every time I pass by, I just I look at it.
Yeah. Okay. Now you're going to do something about it. And that's the one you're going to work on.
Okay, you're there again.
Mm-hmm. Now, anybody else?
One right at 41.
You got one, okay. You guys got one that you can think of that you've seen on the side of the road? Okay, good. Because what we're going to do is we're going to work with the energy, and we're going to clear it and just work with it to disperse the energy. Now, does everybody here know of perhaps a person who's passed, who needs some kind of help, that might have left in a way that's not really beneficial to their growth or would enable them to grow past whatever difficulties it took with them?
Yes.
Does everybody have somebody like that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also, think of an alternate. Because if that spirit that you ask, do you want the healing, says no, you're going to go somewhere else. Because again, maybe that spirit needs that experience that they're in order to learn something, to grow in some fashion. All right, let's take a quick break. And I mean quick break, so we can do this. All right? And we'll come back, do our meditation. We're going to clear a space, and we're going to clear a spirit. Okay?
Boy.